It's very high drama. It's high stakes. And it is forcing you almost. You're like, I need to find out what's happening. And even if the quality isn't necessarily there, I found myself sucked in.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, interviewing Tess Dinnerstein. Now, I bet a ton of you have seen Tess and you didn't even know it. She is somebody who is involved in the world of shorts, the reels, the movies that you see on Instagram that, you know, are 30 seconds and they're dramatic and they want you to watch another 30 seconds and more drama. And then they kind of repeat the drama over and over and over. And, you know, before you know it, you've watched an hour and a half of this drama of, you know, do we know that this guy that is getting, you know, picked on for being a waiter is really a billionaire who is owning the company that people are picking on, that kind of stuff. Tess is somebody who has starred in numerous of these. She's generally the love interest and those type of things. She'll talk about some of the ones that she's been in, but we're going to talk about kind of that world. I knew nothing about it. Of course, I've seen, you know, on Instagram and on Snapchat and TikTok and all that, these shorts, which are called vertical movies. And, you know, I've always kind of thought they were cheesy and kind of silly, but I've been drawn into them myself before. And, you know, I kept seeing her over and over in several different ones. So I was thinking she'd be a great person to talk to just about this world and learn just a little bit more about it. And she was gracious enough to join me. So I really, really appreciate that. She's going to talk about how she got into that world, how it's different from, you know, the horizontal movies. It sounds funny to call them that, but the vertical movies that are shot for a phone screen and the horizontal movies that are shot for average movie watching on TV and in theaters. We'll talk about those differences. We're going to talk about why, you know, they have to create these, you know, hooks every 30 seconds. She's very real about the industry and kind of the cheesiness behind it sometimes and different things. I really, really appreciate her candidness in talking about all things vertical movies. We're going to talk about why she still, she loves the world of vertical, and she's really happy that she was able to break through in it. And we'll talk about some of the things coming up for her in the future. We'll talk about a vertical movie she wants to make herself. Just a wide variety of topics we're going to cover this week, of all things vertical and all things just the entertainment industry. Really, really awesome. I think you're really going to enjoy Tess. If this is your first time listening or you haven't already, go leave a 5-star rating on Apple and on Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. That helps a ton. Go follow along on Instagram and TikTok, Not Enough Podcast, on Facebook, Not Enough with Jackson Huff, all those places. But we'll just get right to the interview now. Here is Tess Dinnerstein. Ms. Dinnerstein, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Hardest question of the evening. Let you do the heavy lifting right out the gate. Just introduce yourself.
I am Tess Amelia Dinnerstein. I'm an actress. Yeah, I think that's what people know about me.
Yeah, we're going to dive deeper so we know a little bit more about you. And I'm going to ask you one question I am sure you've never, ever answered before. Mm-hmm. How did you get your start in acting? Where did the passion start?
My dad was a photographer, a unit set photographer. And he brought me to set one day. They needed a little girl. And it was a bit part on a short-lived TV series that they shot in Chicago called Chicago Code. This has no association with the Dick Wolf, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD. It was a law show about like corrupt police officers. Lasted for one season. And I played the flashback character of one of the main characters, like the flashback version. I just had to do a couple shots for a montage, like explaining her backstory. But I was like, they dress me up, they do my hair, they do my makeup. I get to just like play pretend on camera. And you're telling me I get paid for this? That's awesome. And I want to do this for the rest of my life. That's how I got film and TV. I grew up in a very, very artistic family. So I was on stage at the Lyric Opera of Chicago at 4 years old. And my mom was very, very supportive and fostered my siblings and my artistic pursuits.
Yeah, and you. So, what age did you say that the kind of that first film role came about?
I think I was 11. I believe I was either 10 or 11 because I remember they gave me this trench coat that I got to wear in one of the things. The costumers gifted it to me after the shoot. And I wore it until it was falling off of my body. It was my favorite trench coat.
Yeah, I love that. And side note, I think I'm funny. I'm not naive. Of course, you've answered that question a million times, but that's the only place that we can start. And what I guess I want to move pretty quickly into, because I have a lot of questions about it, is kind of what you moved into at some point in the last few years, and that's these vertical films. I guess let's kind of start with, do I know that you said you grew up in the Chicago area. Did the vertical world, did that was that happening in Chicago, or did you have to move around?
I'm not sure that the verticals are shooting in Chicago at all right now. Chicago has like a small but very loyal film and TV and theater kind of world. It's a great community. It's definitely people don't move there in order to pursue careers in acting necessarily, but it does have a very rich kind of theatrical scene. I moved to LA in 2023, and that was always the plan. It was a postgraduate decision, and I spent about, I want to say, 8 or 9 months struggle jobs. Like I had four or five jobs, just random odd jobs, bartending, personal trainer. I was a birthday party princess. And my manager at the time sent me a audition for this vertical is what it said, vertical short form on the breakdown. And I had auditioned for a couple on my own, like had gotten them for myself. And I just, when I would get the auditions, I'd be like, on earth is happening? Because especially early on, I'd say verticals became big in the US starting in beginning of 2023. Like they were shooting them in 2022. They became big in 2023. So early 2023, when I'm auditioning for these things, I'm like, this is genuinely the worst script I've ever read in my life. And it's so highly dramatized, and the English is not great. Like the grammar of it was never great. It took a lot to add humanity into these scripts. And that's because it was mostly translated from Chinese. And so I booked my first one in August of 2023, and the rest, as they say, is history. I kind of took off from there and was booking them every single month. And then I found myself in a contract with Real Short, who's the biggest vertical streaming platform at the moment in the US. And so it's just been that's my day job is doing these verticals. And it means it allows me to work, 10 days a month. And for the rest, I'm like pursuing passion projects and stuff. But yeah, it's been huge in China for about 10 years, and it made its way over to the US in the last two or three.
Yeah, and that's I was reading all about that. I think that the and I could be wrong, but like the guy who created Real Short, I think that he was from China, and he kind of brought over that thing. So I want to kind of talk about it seems pretty easy, but for people who don't know, they're hearing us continue to say vertical films. It's pretty self-explanatory what a vertical film is when we're thinking about our phone. I'm sure almost everyone at this point has at least seen a 2 or 3 minute clip of those dramatic scenes. But tell us what a vertical film is.
So they film regular movies and TV are filmed in 16 by 9. That's 16 across, 9 up. With the vertical, they literally take the camera and just turn it on its side. Like it's the same camera, they turn it on its side and it's shot in 9 by 16 aspect ratio. And it's shot for your phone. It's meant to be viewed on a phone screen. If you try to put it up on a regular screen, it's just going to be a skinny little image. There are some companies who shoot them both ways. So they'll shoot horizontally and crop it vertically, so that they can sell it as a feature film. But for the most part, these are shot entirely vertically. And it does present a lot of like interesting cinematography issues because you have to stand really close to someone to get two people in a vertical frame. But, we're on our phones all the time. We're watching TikTok, Instagram reels, all of that content is filmed vertically. So there's stock in it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have even thought about the idea that people need to stand a lot closer because of the screen. That makes sense, but it wouldn't something I wouldn't even have considered. But yeah, you're talking about how big vertical films were in China, and then they came over here. I want to kind of just give you a stat that I'm sure you've heard before, but just to talk about it. There was a film that came out last year that was a vertical movie that had 419 million views. Just to put it in perspective, Squid Games that same year had 265 million views, so almost double. So people are really, really watching these things. Just, I guess, what's your perspective of coming from not really knowing what vertical is? You got an audition, you're like, what is this kind of strange script, and what am I got myself into? Turning it into something that has really kind of, I mean, it's surpassed a lot of the things that most people know. So talk a little bit about just I guess, the influx and the surgence of vertical film.
Yeah, it's interesting because actually a vertical viewership, like yes, they're being produced in the US, they're being produced elsewhere as well, English language verticals, but only 40% of the viewers are actually based in the US. So it's very global, and that's because English is a language that a lot of, large conglomerates use. And so it's kind of just a global phenomenon, and it preys on people's like basest instincts when it comes to entertainment. Like the way they structure it, the scripts are written like a short feature. So usually they're about 80 to 100 pages, but they're broken down into 2 or 3 page episodes, which end up being like about 90 seconds, give or take, an episode. And each episode ends with some sort of cliffhanger. It's very high drama, it's high stakes, and it is forcing you almost. You're like, I need to find out what's happening. And even if the quality isn't necessarily there, I found myself sucked in. There was a big one last summer, starring Nicole Maddox and Seth Eden called Breaking the Ice. And this was like before I had done any verticals, and I kept getting ads on my TikTok. And I was like, I kind of want to watch this. I really kind of want to watch more of this. And it like wasn't even that I was like, I'm compelled by the story so much. It's just like, I want to know what's going to happen next. And so I just think that like in the short attention span market, in this world that we've created where everybody can really only be held on to something for 30 seconds, it's capitalized on that.
For sure. I guess I wonder, I wasn't exactly sure how you were, your thoughts on this and how you approached it. So, I didn't necessarily write these kind of questions, but now that I kind of hear you, I just wonder on set, how seriously are people taking these? Because the few that I've watched, I'm the same way. I'm like, oh my God, I want to see what's happening. But at the same time, it's almost frustrating. Like, how many 3 minutes are we going to say the same thing? And we ne just say what you need. Just say it. Just say it.
Yeah, no, you see that especially. I mean, it even frustrates me sometimes when I'm part of them where I'm like, just say you're the billionaire. Yeah, or he'll be like, well, I'm actually the CEO of Jones Group. And everyone will be like, no, you're not. And that scene will go on for like 13 pages. But I would say there's a lot of variation on sets. And right now, we're in a point at which the industry itself is changing rapidly. Because for the most part, in the past 2 years, it's been Chinese-backed companies, like either companies that are based in China or funded from China. Like they have Chinese investors. And so they were working off of a Chinese model, which is very algorithmic and very much like we're going to recreate the same IP again and again and again. In the recent months, you've seen a rise of European models, so like Ukrainian, Turkish, Lithuanian, the UK, they're popping up these apps that are not funded from China, and they're kind of pushing the boundaries of what a vertical is. I'll have onset experiences where I'm like doing a ridiculously titled project, like, oops, I accidentally got pregnant with my professor or something, like, so clickbaity. And everyone on set is a professional. They all, many of them are seasoned industry professionals who have worked on some real projects in Hollywood. And this is just the work that they have found themselves in now. And so you kind of have a mix of people who are like, I'm going to take this seriously, and people who are like, this is just a paycheck. And my favorite people to be around are the ones that just want to keep it light and fun. Because at the end of the day, we're shooting, you know, 80 pages in 8 days. And that's being generous. Like, you're shooting anywhere from 10 to 20 pages a day. And to put that into perspective, on a regular network show or movie, 4 to 6. Like, the fastest they shoot is usually 8. And so this is like breakneck pace. And so you can't take it too seriously, because you do have to compromise some sort of artistic integrity. I had a director talking the other night about how he hated that you get 2 takes and you move on. You don't get to get that perfect take. You can't muscle it in. It's a well-oiled machine. It's not necessarily craftsmanship, but I also think that that leaves room for, like, it's a sprint and a marathon at the same time. And so it leaves room for really interesting challenges and seeing how we can kind of push this format to make something better.
Oh, I love it. And I want to get more specific into the format in a minute, but we're going to take our first little bit of a break to play that first game, if we will. Now, we're going to play two. So there's 3 different games. This is the only time I say it helps to have ever listened to an episode before, because I'm just going to tell you the titles. And from there, we're going to pick 2 of them. You'll pick your first one now. The titles of the games are Podcast Realities, Rapid Fire, Generally No Follow-Up, and Bravo, Your Picture's Being Framed. Which is the first one you want to do?
Let's do that first one that you said.
Podcast Realities. Okay. This one's going to be interesting because I've already been able to tell a little bit of it. So, you know, I interview so many people that, you know, whether they're in a noisy bar, whether they're, you know, sitting on their couch or sitting in an office building, there's always different podcast realities going on. So we're going to do 5 questions kind of just to talk about your surroundings that you joined me in. They're going to get, I guess, progressively harder, but any of them you don't want to answer, we'll pass. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Easy enough. How are you joining me today? Are we on your phone? Are you on a computer? Where are we at?
On a laptop.
You're on a laptop. Are you sitting at a desk?
I am.
All right. Next one is, how much did you have to prepare for this when it comes to, did you make sure that you got your makeup perfect and your outfit all picked out? Did you just say, oh crap, I've got this podcast to do and hurry up and jump on? What preparation came into coming
up? Well, I put on some makeup this morning and then I went through my day. I just got back from the gym. I changed clothes. I changed out of my gym clothes and then I was like, it's time to sign on. Ran a brush through me.
I like it. The next one, you've got the blurry background, but I have seen some silhouette of a cat. So I know that there's at least one somewhere around there, but I always like to ask, you know, we're doing all the talking. Is there any animals in the room that hadn't gotten their 15 minutes of fame?
Yep. He's passed out.
Yeah. So it's a cat.
Yep. It's a cat. It's my cat. He's the only one in the building though.
I love it. Next one I always ask is, I say I leave it to TMI if people are not wearing pants from because I can only see you from the shoulders up. I leave it to TMI whether you're wearing pants, but we're on a professional interview. Did you wear shoes to the podcast, or at the very least, put some socks on?
I have socks on.
Yeah. Last one is, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you proof, definitely given that you have the blurry background, but if we were to do a 360 of the room? Are you at all embarrassed at the state of it?
Well, I'm packing for a trip right now, and so it's a little bit messy, but like a normal amount.
I think that's fair. It seems lived in. If it was super clean, then that would just be weird, right?
Yeah, and I have a lot of stuff. Like I'm a gatherer. I like to say I have trinkets. I have knickknacks.
I like it. I like it. Well, that's podcast realities. We'll do the next one here in a bit. But that wasn't too tough, was it?
No, not at all.
Oh, well, good. Well, let's go right back into talking about verticals. You already kind of talked about it, kind of in your answers already. But I want to kind of just get down to the heart of, because I know that you've done things outside of the vertical space. Mm-hmm. How has filming as a whole just been different? What's the biggest difference since you've already talked about some of the differences? Is it just the amount of time that you have to do it? Is it the way that the scripts are written? What's the biggest difference between the both?
I would say the time thing is a challenge, but it's not necessarily absurd in the grand scheme of filmmaking. Like, you'll find yourself on student productions, indie productions, like indie horrors, notoriously, you have to do a ton of pages a day just to get through it on the low budgets that they have. I would say it differs and it changes that it evolves. I feel like adapting to a vertical frame is one of the hardest things. It very often feels not intuitive. I always joke that, like, no walking and talking on a vertical. So you can't be delivering a line as you're walking because the camera can't keep up with you. There's not space for you to really move around. So the framing is really tough, but I've gotten used to it at this point. I think I've done like 13 of these. So like I've gotten the hang of the framing part. And then, you know, the content is very often absurd, and having to sell it as a whole, the verticals are boot camp for actors, for directors, for cinematographers. Like, it's a boot camp. You are creating a feature film in 8 days and you're not necessarily even passionate about the material. Or if you are, not everything's going to go right. Like, this, you have to be very, very adaptable. But I would say that, like, one of the biggest challenges I've found is sometimes I'll have a script that I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to sell this. Like, there was one that I did where, like, the lights go out. This one's unreleased, so I can't give you the title or the context, but
all right.
There's like a power outage in the room. The male lead is standing literally right in front of me, and we're like about to kiss, and then the lights go out. And then I go, where are you? And I'm like, why would you leave? What do you mean, where are you? He was right there. Why would he have moved? But there's stuff like that all the time that I'm just like, the scripts don't go through as many edits as a regular feature script goes through sometimes. And that's just because the pre-production is also shortened, just like the actual shoot is shortened. Everything is condensed in these, so it doesn't often go through the same amount of vetting. And then also the high stakes drama. There's a lot of like vertical tropes at this point. There have been enough. Like, in no other part of this industry would I be getting various liquids dumped on me. Like, I have a set bag. I call it my apocalypse bag. I have 3 pairs of underwear in there. Like, not because I'm peeing myself at work, but because, like, I never know what's going to happen. I might get shoved into a swimming pool. I might get waterboarded. Like, I have to get like drenched so often for work. So the conditions are just like rough and we're getting slapped around. I have to cry 4 times a day.
I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. It's refreshing to hear you, how you talk about it. I don't know. When I booked you, I had no idea how you see all of this. So, I mean, I didn't know whether I need to write these questions to be like, basically these are Emmy award winning films. So I like the way that you talk about it. I mean, I think everyone that watches realizes it's kind of cheesy, but that's why people love it so much, that it's just so, I don't know. It's so goofy sometimes that people are like, all right, That's what happened to me when I watched him. I thought, this is the silliest thing I've ever seen.
The kind of line between camp, like that's the ones that have been the most successful to me is because there's an air of campiness to it that like it's not taking itself too seriously. Like you're not going to see an art house film on Real Short. And that's because that's not the format is not conducive to that sort of filmmaking. So when you can like add in a little bit of campiness and, you know, Jesse Morales, my co-star in How to Tame a Silver Fox, his little curly Q on his forehead, like that was so silly. He looked like, you know, Silver Superman, but it added the perfect degree of like, I get so many comments on all my social media of like, what's with the curly hair? What's with the curl? And I'm like, well, clearly you guys really, really noticed that.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. For sure. And, you know, I kind of ragged on it a minute just now to give it some props. And that is, you know, I've talked to dozens at this point, authors that have written, you know, big New York Times bestselling series. And we've talked about how it's really important to write a book, you know, whether it, you know, it's number 15 in the series that somehow allows people to just to read that book and never have read another one. Because if people, you're not going to sell very many books if they have to have read every single one. Nobody wants that. And the really skillful thing that happens in these films is, even though they're, you know, they're two minute increments, they do a pretty good job of bringing you in no matter what episode that you're watching. So, you know, when I've seen an episode before and you know, then I'm kind of looking for it more out there, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was actually like episode 15. And I thought that was the beginning of the whole thing. So I guess how intentional, you know, you talked about how the scripts don't go through a ton of editing. So maybe it's not intentional at all, but how intentional are they in making sure every 2 minutes can bring people in as it's their first time watching it?
So I don't even think it's with the same intention that, say, an author would have of like, if you pick up this book, you can read it whether or not you've read the previous 14. I think that it is another connection to attention spans. And I have heard executive producers of these kind of talk about how people are watching them when they're folding laundry. They're watching them when they're wrangling their kids. They're watching them. They're not even watching them. They're just listening to them on their commute. Like, people are not paying attention. And so it's actually written with the intention of repeating what's happening a couple of times so that if you missed it the first 3 times, you'll get it this time. And I guess it serves the same purpose of like, that's what you missed on Glee. Like you can drop in anywhere in the story and you're going to get the context because someone who actually was watching from the beginning missed the context.
Yeah. And as an actor in those, how do you bring intention into that where, you know, you've realized definitely the way that you're, you know, you're in every one of them, you're paying attention to what's going on. What's it like having to, I guess, bring that same passion into saying the same thing for the 15th time?
I'm trying to find a different intention for myself every single time I say it. So like the one that I just had, it was released today. It's called The Virgin Stripper and the Hockey Star. And I play the virgin stripper, not the hockey star. And I would say about 20 times in the script, I go, he can't know that I'm secretly a stripper, or I'm a secret stripper and he's a senator's son. But I mentioned being a secret stripper or secretly being a stripper 20 times, because like, in case you didn't get it the first 15 times, secretly, I'm a stripper. It is not common knowledge. I am a secret stripper. And I like sat down before that shoot and I like went through the character and I'm like, why am I so obsessed with this? And so I'm like, okay, her character is kind of rooted in this shame about being a stripper. It's a stigmatized role. And so that's why she keeps ruminating on it. And it's human to ruminate. Like, how many of us have found ourselves in situations where we're like, running ourselves ragged, running around in circles in our head, thinking about the same situation again and again and again that you feel guilty or you feel bad about. And so I'm like, if it's rooted in guilt, then yeah, I might say it 20 times.
I feel like there, I haven't read all of the titles, you know, to these shorts, but I do feel like there's a game that could be played of, is this a real short movie or is this like a pornography that has came out?
Yeah.
They come up with some interesting names for sure.
I always had, I was like, if I ever did a vertical podcast, I'd want to play a game called Let's Write a Vertical, and there'd be an actual spinning wheel. And so you'd like spin the wheel, or you'd throw a dart or something, and it would be like, I accidentally married, contract married, surrogate for, like, there are a couple, and then my professor, my boss, the CEO, the mafia king, the alpha. And it's just the same. It's like really good search engine optimization.
No. Today I watched like your story on Instagram, and I think that you may, I don't know whether you were on set with this movie with hockey. You were at a hockey rink,
Yep, that was
and
PR for Virgin Tripper and the Hockey Star.
because I've seen you in another short interview talking about how much you would love to do comedy, and I think you kind of were able to show your comedy chops in that. You made me laugh when it comes to kind of the way that you were doing your reporting there. Do you ever get to, I guess, show that side of things in this, or is there a time and place for that? And this is more, you know, that drama.
I think that there are comedies, there are rom-coms. Like the thing is, these verticals align so well with A, like romance novel culture, and then B, just rom-com. Like they have a lot of meet cutes. It's like I accidentally married my boss in Vegas. Like there are things that are just like you're doing fake dating, arranged marriage, like marriage for convenience sort of things that are maybe not necessarily like real life circumstances, but they're very rom-commy. And I have been begging to like do a more like silly, goofy rom-commy one. They love to put me in the dramas though.
No.
They love me in the dramas. I have to like look sad and cry and be bullied.
Do you, so at this point, are you just kind of, you know, part of the stable and they just tell you what you're going to be in? Do you actually audition for these things anymore? What's that look like?
It depends. Once you reach a certain point, like what's so interesting about this is that most of my roles have come through Instagram. I'll get like a DM of someone being like, I'm a producer on this and would love to work with you. And that was like a bunch of my roles have come through that. Sometimes it's a straight offer, and sometimes it's they want to see a tape. And it really just depends on what the client wants, and the client is who's funding the whole thing. And it differs based on how many you've done. There are a couple of the like bigger actors who've been in this space for a while who won't tape. If they get offered a tape, they'll say, "Here's my vertical reel," or "Here's a list of the shows that I've been in. If you want me, you want me. If you don't, you don't." But I think that it is very much like once you do one, you're in that world. And people know who you are. And this was especially true when I was getting into it. I think now the industry is becoming more saturated, so it's a little bit tougher. And I'm glad that I got my foot in the door when I did. But it really depends. And like right now I'm working with Real Short, and so they will sometimes send me like two projects and have me tape for both. And they're like, we're gonna give you one of them, but we wanna see which one you would be a better fit for.
You talked about how you're getting a lot of your offers in DMs. I'm just thinking about, you know, I've interviewed at this point a lot of my childhood heroes when it comes to stars in nostalgia, and almost all of them at this point, you know, if they're doing this podcast, they're generally kind of in different parts of their career now, whether they're painters or whether they're just doing small films. But they talk about how, you know, they struggle to, I guess, weed through the noise. You know, you have people that are doing really, really awesome independent films, and you have people that are like, I want to fly you out for $500 to Texas. How do you make sure that your all of these DMs are legitimate? Like, how do you weed through things?
Well, I have like a go-to response. If I'm already booked for something, I'll be like, "Hey, thank you for reaching out. I'm actually booked these dates, but I would love to work with you in the future." Like, just to be like, this isn't a no, this is just a maybe next time. I will not sign on to a project until I have read the script. there are too many that are get the content can get really, really like abusive towards women or questionable consent. And I am not going to tell those stories. Like I am, if there's any language of consent that's even sort of questionable, I will bring it up with production. And if they're not willing to change it, then I'm not willing to be a part of that project. And the same goes for like unnecessarily violent towards women. Like there are a lot where they, women get beat and the men never do. And so I'm just like, I don't need to tell that story. Like people are very, very susceptible to brainwashing in this like social media sphere. And so I have to read a script. So usually like I'll try to bring it out of DMs as fast as possible. I'll go, you can email me the information. And it's like, they have to be able to meet my rate. They have to be able to, the script has to not be bad. And so it just comes into negotiation. So it's like, I get the DM and then it turns into a business negotiation of like, I'll read the script. You have to be able to meet this certain rate. And then like, if they want to tape, then they want to tape, and that's a whole other thing. But it's different for every production company.
Talking about the, I guess the content and sometimes it not being things that the stories you want to tell, which I think is great that you put your foot down when it comes to that. But with quote unquote regular films, obviously they've got to, you know, send things away and get that PGR rating and those type of things. When it comes to being on TV, there's censorship there. With these, what kind of oversight, what kind of censorship do they have? Is it just wanting to make sure that it can be done on TikTok, or is there anything, or do you sometimes get ones that's like, oh, I want you to be B and nude the entire time? Like what kind of censorship is there?
There's no nudity allowed because these apps are all 12 and up. So they have to fall, and they fall under, I think, a social media category. So like no nudity in verticals, which I have no problem with. I'm like, I don't think it needs nudity. I feel like if you gave them leeway to have nudity, they would really take it and run with it. There are certain things like they have, Real Short at least has this thing where it's like, you can't have any like, in the first 10 episodes, which are typically the ones that they use to get clicks from social media, you can't have any kissing on a bed because the like filters for Instagram and TikTok will like flag that as porn. So they have like these vague sort of rules, and they just started putting content warnings on some of the apps. So like Kalos TV will have specific content warnings, which I think is a huge step in the right direction, because there's really frequently sexual assault and sexual abuse by like a villain character, or there's parental abuse, or, you know, people are getting killed. They're very, very highly sensationalized drama. And I feel like it's changing as the audience changes. So like, because this was off of a Chinese model, China has different censorship rules. They have different content rules than the US. And I think the US viewers, first of all, are paying more attention to what they're watching. So like, it's not the same as like, you might be folding laundry and watching it, but you're still watching it. And so you're not just going to turn away and you're going to watch someone get beaten for three straight episodes, and it's going to be upsetting. Versus like, if you're a viewer who's not paying attention, you know, you tuned in for 30 seconds, and that's what grabbed your attention again, is like, oh, someone got slapped. I like looked over now. But I think that as we move forward in this space, there's more content warnings, and there's more actors kind of putting their foot down and saying, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous.
I think that's important. And you're talking about the viewers and how viewers are changing. What's the fandom look like for this? Are you finding that, you know, people are creating fandoms around specific movies? Are they creating fandoms around specific actors, just shorter verticals as a whole? What's it generally look like?
Yeah. So there are, I would say, actor fan pages and then vertical fan pages. So one of the best, Vertical Drama Love, Jen runs the account. She's great. She does like interviews with actors on YouTube. And her page is reviews of verticals, kind of talking about why, like, she doesn't like BDSM plot lines, and like she kind of goes into why, and like she creates discussions and discourse on social media. And I think a lot of them do. There are a lot of review pages where they'll review their verticals. And then there are specific actor fan pages. Like, I think at this point I have like three or four, which is wild to me.
Do you try to interact with them?
I do, yeah. I'm not gonna answer every single question they shoot my way. Because I'm getting job offers in my DMs.
Yeah.
But so they'll post pictures of their favorite actor, or like, this new project with my favorite actor just dropped, or here are some BTS footage. Because that's also like, I have a secret film account, and it is, I don't let anybody follow it. Like, only people that I know personally, that I am friends with in person, can follow it. I have let two or three of the fan accounts follow it, because I'm like, you know what? Here, you can have these little like behind the scenes from my life. It's still like, it's social media, so it's not like I'm posting anything on there that like my mom can't see. But I think that like saying, okay, thank you for supporting me. Thank you for being so supportive that you created a whole Instagram page for me. Here is what you can have in exchange. Like, you're part of my inner circle now. And 'cause I really am grateful for having a fan base. I never imagined that I would like find myself in that position.
I love that. And before we wrap up the world of vertical, are you ready for that last game?
I am indeed.
All right. If you remember, we've already done podcast reality. So the one or the other two is either rapid fire, generally no follow-up, or Bravo, your picture's being framed. Which one do you want to do?
Let's do Bravo, your picture's being framed.
All right. Now this one's not one that people pick a lot. So I've got to read it to you. This segment allows you to give your props praise to something that's happened to you recently. Did the Walmart greeter make you smile? Did that brand new shampoo just change your life? Maybe your aunt finally accepted your strange collection of dolls. Shout out someone or something in your life that just needs some kudos.
Ooh, that's a good one. I just had a conversation with a director slash producer about producing a script that I wrote. So that was really exciting. I've been working on this script since November, and I finally like finished the second edit and am trying to get it off its feet. So
I was gonna ask you about. I knew that you were writing a script. Well, we can cover that a little bit more. So you're excited that that's finally getting some legs then.
yeah, I think I was really inspired by a couple other actors in the vertical space, stepping into producer roles, and like I'll shout him out. Adam Santa Cruz is a actor and a writer, and I met him back in October, and he was super, super helpful with like just telling me how to structure a script. But he has had a couple scripts get produced. Like, he's taking a couple months off acting in the past to write. And he answers all of my questions about writing. And then I just have a network of people now that I can go to. But I finally finished the script in a way that I felt good about it. And I asked around for contacts and was given someone who has a production company, and has worked on indie verticals, which is like a crazy concept. Like, indie doesn't really exist here. You need funding from the apps. So if you can make an indie, you have way more leeway to do what you want with it. There's so much more creativity. And so he was the perfect guy for it. And so it was really, really cool to get to talk to him about that. And I hope that it can get off its feet. It is a pirate vertical, so they don't exist yet. You heard it here
Well,
first.
all right, I love it. Well, that producer, that guy, that's who we're whose picture is being framed in the mail. It's in the mail. So many people pick the rapid fire, generally no follow-up, but I actually wrote a follow-up question, so I'm just gonna the one question that is in there is just about some of your favorite music. I've listened to you talk about, I guess, your love for Carly Rae Jepsen. I want to tell you one thing. I saw her. Oh goodness, probably like 4 or 5 years ago. I live really close to downtown Indianapolis. I'm in Indiana. And, you know, the last minute, a lot of times tickets go really cheap to random shows. So I'm like, I know the one song from Carly Rae Jepsen.
You know, Call Me Maybe.
So it was like $5 at 20 minutes before it started. I'm like, yeah, I'll drive downtown. I'm sure she's not going to sing that song before I get there. And then I got there and I was blown away. I mean, she sings more than that one song, and she's actually pretty good.
She does. She does. She's a great musician. She's like Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone has reviewed all of her albums, like rave reviews. I adore Carly Rae Jepsen. I kind of fell down the hole when she came out with Dedicated, which is, it's like a white album. She comes out with B-sides of all of her albums too, so it's great. So like, I love the album. And then like 6 months to a year later, I get another album. So she just has like such a long discography that I can listen to her all day. And it's just such fun music, and it's good pop music. And I love good pop music. It's like, it's clever lyricism. It's catchy tunes. It's something you've heard before with also something you haven't.
So how pinkies up, how pretentious do you get with it now? Because there's people that are like, I hate that song that everyone knows. You got to listen to everything else. And Call Me Maybe, it's not even really that good of a song by her. How do you feel?
I feel that Call Me Maybe obviously it captured the nation's attention. I feel like after listening to her whole discography and being very familiar with it, coming back, I'm like, yeah, no, this is a great fucking song. Like, this is a great song. It makes sense how famous it got for her, because like, it's clever, it's catchy, it's funny if you listen to the lyrics. So I love it. And also, I'm so unpretentious when it comes to music. I'm never going to yuck anyone's yum.
Well, you're not very pretentious when it comes to very much. I generally like the way that you answer these questions, because that's the thing that just drives me crazy when, you know, someone tells me a band and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that one song. Oh, well, that's awful. They've got so much more. I apologize that I know the one song that everyone else knows. And I was trying to relate to you. My sincere apologies.
Yeah, no, I feel like I with the field that I'm in, I have no space to be pretentious. I love my job. I love the work that I do, but I'm not sitting here thinking that like I'm making high art.
Yeah. I want to get to the hardest question. That is criticism when it comes to the world of vertical media. You know, I've read articles. Again, I was relatively new to this world when we set this up, and I'm so glad that I learned about it. But people talk about how, you know, I've read people that say, you know, I like these things, but, you know, I saw some person say, I timed it out and it was 20 minutes of video that I watched and 47 minutes of ads I had to watch for the 20 minutes. I saw somebody else that said, I just for fun bought everything I needed to buy, and I spent $87 trying to watch one film. What, I guess, how do you react to that criticism? And I'm going to kind of give a little bit of the other side of that to think, okay, with these regular films and TV, there's ads, somebody's got it. There's got to be a way for people to make money here, or no one's going to do anything. So, but talk about, I guess, those criticisms.
Yeah, I think the criticisms are very, very valid, because I do think that these can be a little cost preventative. And I think that it's ridiculous that they cost more than regular streaming services. So it just feels predatory in my eyes, of like, you're preying on people, you're banking on them wanting to watch the next episode. And then they're spending a bunch of money, and then they're getting pissed off at me because they think that I did that to them. But I'm like, I'm sorry that you spent $75 to watch the whole thing. I would not have, I would give it to you for free if I could. But like, of course, someone has to make money somehow. Like that's how the machine works. I think that though it feels like that is what really compromises the artistic integrity. It's not the content. It's not the writing. It's like, it's nothing except the fact that they are trying to make things that are cash cows without necessarily caring if people care about them. So like, they have a bunch of statistics about how many people actually finish the last episode. And it's usually less than 20% of viewers will actually watch it all the way to the end. And it's because people get fed up. And they do offer, most of these apps offer like yearly subscriptions. But one, it's the same thing as like the streaming wars, where like you can't have a subscription to Hulu and Netflix and HBO Max and Amazon Prime and Paramount Plus. Like, you're spending so much money at that point. So, like, how are you supposed to pick which vertical apps you want to have a subscription for if you're going to go the subscription route? And the subscriptions are also, like, real short, I'm pretty sure it's $200 a year, which is, like, more than I pay for Hulu with ads. And I just think that it's hard when a lot of these companies are creating the same thing again and again and again to justify buying a subscription. I wouldn't buy a subscription to Netflix if Netflix was just making the same movie in different time periods. I'm like, that's not the story I want to watch. And so it feels like they're commodifying entertainment, which inherently you have to commodify entertainment in order to make it a job. But they've taken a lot of the entertainment out of it. And I think that at a certain point, there has to be a line, or there has to be a reason for people to buy a subscription. You wouldn't have to watch all those ads if you felt like there was enough good content on this app that you were going to pay for a subscription.
You know, Tess, I write these questions to let you get out of it in any way that you want. Predatory is obviously the word that I saw a lot, but I wasn't gonna put that word because I didn't wanna make you have to address that. But I guess my question is, you agree with most people. You're pretty firm on this, but you still do you not worry at all saying these things that it makes people makes you know the filmers worry? I don't know. I'm surprised you're saying the things that you say.
I believe in this industry, like, first and foremost, no matter what I say. And I think that coming with believing in something is knowing that it can grow in and change and evolve in like really wonderful ways. And I think that it's not going to if nobody says anything. And I think that the constructive criticism from within and from someone who does love this industry and is fully intending on staying in it means more than someone yelling on the internet about how they hated the content, they hated the ads, blah, blah, blah. Like, I believe that verticals have legs. I don't think they're going anywhere. We spend so much time on our phone. Why not be watching movies on our phone? I don't think that anyone benefits from not saying something.
I love that. And I know that Real Short is kind of the big dog on campus. They're the ones that are the biggest. Do you see other ones? You talked about other ones kind of popping up, but are there others that are really challenging Real Short to I guess, be a big one? Because I could see that as being a way that cost is driven down if, you know, there's so many other ones and so many other options. You're right, yeah.
Honestly, Real Short is great because they actually do have a subscription choice on it. A lot of people like just go with the ads because people want free content. And again, like you said, in my defense of like calling it predatory, I'm not saying any one person is being predatory. I think that we all have to make money. Real Short employs so many people, like so many lovely creative people. They have to make money somehow. And they're producing 15 to 20 shows a month. So like not all of those shows are successes. Not all of their shows are making money. So they have to figure out how to make as much money as they can on big hits. In terms of other apps, like Dramabox is the biggest one in China, I believe. It's like the biggest one globally, and it's the second biggest here in the US. I really think at this point that would be their only, because the speed at which you can produce content has a lot to do with how high on the rankings you can stay. And because you can, the more content you produce, the more money you can make. And the more money you can make, the, you know, you're solidifying your status more. I also think that Real Short had, if you like look at traditional streamers, Netflix was kind of first, and they have held their position of being first. And their strategy there was flooding the market with content. Not all of it was good, but a lot of it was good and award-winning. And So Real Short kind of did the same thing of like they got in first, they flooded the market. So, and they have the most money for advertising. They put the most money into advertising.
And the last thing I'll say about this is the people who spend $78 to watch this, these things, I'll tell you, and I'll say this very carefully, that, in booking you, of course I wanted to make sure that I at least watched one complete movie. And all I'll say is, it's not impossible to find a way to watch these things without ads and without paying for them. So there's ways to do that.
Yeah.
So
Obviously, I'm never going to tell people and promote people to do that.
correct, correct.
I'm like, I need my bills paid, and I
Right.
really, really need the company who pays my bills to continue to make money.
Exactly.
But
But just don't spend $78 is what we'll
nothing's a
say.
tale as old as time. Everyone knows one. Like, I've been on 1, 2, 3 movies since I was 10 years old.
Right. Well, let's talk about the one that no one should pirate. And did you say it was a pirate short? Well, to talk as much as you want about your individual one.
Goodness.
And
Okay,
I
so
can't believe I was able to tie that together. You shouldn't pirate that
yeah,
pirate short.
that was a really good
Man.
segue. Good job. It's so early that I'm like, everything I say is essentially fantasy world. But I started this vertical as a bit. I think I was on my third or fourth ever, and I'm like, I could write one of these because I wrote fan fiction. Like, I was a fan fiction girly growing up, and I read romance novels, and I love a rom-com, so I'm like, I could write one. And I was like, you know what they don't do? There's no pirate one. And I feel like, people love Pirates of the Caribbean. And how do you make these super high stakes and like people getting kidnapped and people getting stabbed and poisoned and whatnot? Like, how make that make sense? It makes sense in pirates. Gender roles make sense in pirates. And so these are a lot of like pillars of the vertical format. And I just tried to make it make sense. And so I wrote a script very, very Pirates of the Caribbean inspired. And like, did a bunch of research to see how possible it would be. Wrote it with, production in mind, trying to keep costs as low as possible. And finally, like, I was writing between being on set all the time. So it took me like 3 or 4 months to actually finish the script. Hated the ending, scrapped the whole thing, had to rework most of the script. Finally got it to a point where I was like, I feel good about this, and started, pitching it, and I don't have real funding for it. I have one person who could get it, make it happen, tell me that he thinks it's interesting. So, but yeah, it's a classic, hate to love pirate story about kidnapping.
Going to take some I guess some crafty production, just because I know I read a stat, and this world of shorts kind of merges the two together, and that is Pirates of the Caribbean, one of the most expensive films to film, and then actually the most expensive adult film ever was a pirate movie. So it's expensive to film pirate stuff, but I guess
It
we'll
is.
figure it
It
out.
is. But I'm trying to keep it as low cost as possible. Also, I am like stunt trained. I'm trained in rapier and dagger and broadsword. And really, at the end of the day, I just wanted to be able to sword fight. So I already have that training. I'll make sure that the other actors have that training. So like, a lot of the money you're spending, I feel like can be mitigated.
And we've got to ask, with you said that you did fan fiction. What were you doing fan fiction of? I'm scared to ask because I think that you're relatively younger than me, but I don't know whether you're like a Twilight fan fiction person or Pirates of the Caribbean. What are we doing?
I wasn't doing Twilight. I would say the most I did some Hunger Games fan fiction. There was a show on the CW called The Hundred, and I wrote some fan fiction of The Hundred. And then I was big on, there was a book series coming out, like, I want to say 2007 to 2012, called The Mortal Instruments, which actually originally started as a Harry Potter fan fiction. I never wrote Harry Potter fan fiction, but I did write fan fiction based on this book series. I loved The Mortal Instruments. It has like countless spinoffs now at this point. And so those were my big ones. I was a big like book reader, so.
people write fan fiction, they normally either want way more killing or way more kissing. Which way was your fan fiction?
My fan fiction was kissy kissy.
Yeah.
I didn't write like too much smut because I was like, this is weird. Like I felt weird about it, but definitely like I loved a good romantic plot line. But that's I have told production companies before, and I'm like, you guys, I hate to say it, need more, either more blood or more romance.
I like it. Well, hey, I think that's what some people need, the actors just to tell them what I mean, if you've been in enough at this point, I think that you probably know what works and what doesn't. So I like that. And I want to move into kind of just your future in this world. And before we get to your future in Vertical, you know, now that you've done so many, I guess my question to you is, do you have aspirations to get out of that? And do you worry at all, you know, about being pigeonholed? What's it look like? Has people left that world and moved into other things? Is people kind of just Vertical actors and then the rest of Hollywood sees them as that? Or what's that look like?
I don't know, because the thing is, it's such a new format that you can't really tell how people are going to be perceived. But for example, the girl playing Elle Woods in the Amazon Prime Elle Woods series was a Vertical actress. I don't know if her Verticals had anything to do with it, but like, we're working alongside people, we're working all around people who have either already done professional, like horizontal Hollywood film, or are on their way to doing it. And so I'm definitely not going to discount that. And I would love to be able to do both, because I think that like, I love Verticals because I think they serve an incredibly underserved demographic. Like, men have porn. Women don't want to watch porn. Women want to watch emotional, you know, fluff, which you get with Verticals. And I think like, when done right, it really resonates with a lot of people. And like, you can see that with a lot of the fan accounts. It's really wonderful to like see how it resonates, and it feels good, because I'm like, I've always felt like the soap opera crowd is underserved, because soap operas aren't really a thing anymore, and so something needed to fill their spot. There's really no way to tell where this industry is going, but I do have aspirations. I would love to be able to produce, obviously, like that's why I'm writing. I want to have more of my hand in creating the type of work that I'm doing. I've always had a dream to be able to write something that I am in. So when I'm able to make that happen, it's going to feel really good. I would love to dip my toes in directing at some point. I think that I have an eye for it. I'm writing other things. I'm writing things that aren't Verticals. I'm writing shorts. I'm working with friends on their projects. I think that what these Verticals have really enabled me to do is be a full-time actor. And that's amazing. Like, I never imagined that I would be a full-time actor, and I'm paying my bills on acting alone and getting to be creative at my job and doing what I always wanted to do. And I don't know. I have experienced pigeonholing already, like in the Vertical community, of like, I get so many offers for age gap stories. And I'm like, I cannot be the age gap. I can't do that. It like goes along the lines of like, what stories are you willing to tell? And I'm like, How to Tame a Silver Fox was, I thought, a sweet little love story at its core. Yes, it was an age gap story, but like, they didn't really lean into it to a point that it was like gross, but I'm just worried. I'm like, I can't keep testing my luck.
Yeah. Well, I think there's eventually a line to be drawn. I think definitely when you're starting, you're newer in the acting world, it does get a little bit tough. You know, obviously I can do another one that I wish I didn't have to do, or I could, you know, pay the rent. So that sometimes you got to put your foot down. And I think it sounds like you're doing a good job with it. So I like to hear that for sure. Go ahead.
I feel very grateful for where I am right now. Like, I feel incredibly grateful for this industry. And like, that's also like all, again, all this to say, all the criticisms I have, any docs towards it, it's because I love it and I believe in it. And I think that it's got teeth. There's like, this isn't going anywhere.
Well, in just completely wrapping up, you know, I guess, do you want to, where do you hope that this career goes? Do you want to be the biggest vertical actor known to the world, or are you ever, and you put it this way, I wrote it this way and then realized it sounds kind of strange, but do you want to move from vertical to horizontal films, or what do you want to do?
It's okay. That's what we say in the industry. Yeah. I would love to do a horizontal. I want to do horizontals, as they say. Like I think that like my ideal career is doing TV series. Mm-hmm. Like I would love to do a TV series. I'm not that that's not that I would say poo on a movie, but like I love the idea of a TV series because you get your cast and you get to all hang out. And like a lot of times what's so sad about these verticals is you finish shooting them in 10 days and then you don't know when you're going to see any of those people ever again. And so I think that like that's what's so I'm drawn to the idea of having a group of coworkers that like I get to see every day at work and like creating a long-term kind of story, because these verticals are kind of one and done. They've done a couple of sequels, but for the most part it's one and done. And so just being able to tell like a much longer story arc would be great.
Well, you've been so gracious with your time. I truly want to wrap it up. I want you just to tell people how they can follow along with you, whether it's your social media, whether it's a certain app that you want people to watch your new films, whatever, shout it out.
Yeah. So you can follow me on socials at tess.din on Instagram or tessadin on TikTok. It reads like Tessa Din. And then I am currently in 4 projects on Real Short, which is the biggest vertical streaming platform. And you can, I believe they now have a new feature where you can search my name and find me. And a couple other streaming platforms. But yeah, definitely, if you follow along on my Instagram, I keep it up to date with everything that's happening.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was lovely meeting you.
That was Tess Dinnerstein. Amazing conversation. Really appreciate her candidness and just talking real about the industry. You know, it's a really cool industry, but it has its problems too. There's some areas that some people would consider, you know, a little bit predatory when it comes to how people pay for subscriptions, all that kind of stuff. She talked about kind of the good and the bad there and being able to watch the content. You know, she talked about the amazingness of the world and how it has so much room for opportunity to expand. You know, a lot of these scripts are kind of written in foreign countries that translate kind of interestingly sometimes. So I think there's a lot of room for growth, and Tess is kind of in the ground floor of that. I think there's big things coming for her in both the vertical movie world and the horizontal movie world. I'm really happy that I got to speak with her. I look forward to seeing her own vertical movie coming out sometime, maybe horizontal at some point, but her own vertical movie that she's writing. I think that would be really awesome. I hope to check back in with her at that point when it comes out and maybe have another conversation. But awesome conversation today with Tess. All the links to follow along with her will be in the show notes. Go check out her vertical movies. I guarantee you, you know, you've probably already seen some of them if you've been on TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat, any of those places. A lot of them are featured there. As I said in the beginning, if this is your first time listening, go follow along on Instagram and on TikTok, Not Enough Podcast, Not Enough for Jackson Enough on Facebook. Go leave that 5-star review. Helps a ton on Apple and on Spotify. A written review on Apple as well. But we'll see you next time. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time, where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think. Or, hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.